it's not the solution, right? But I think it is a healthy introduction to what can be a very difficult conversation. And I wanted to create something that churches all across the country and people in general could connect with.
Welcome to Dangerous Dogma, the authority on questioning authority. I'm Brian Kaler, president of Word and Way. You can learn more about us at wordandway.org. In this episode, we're going to have a conversation with Craig Lamar Brown and Andrea Summer about the forthcoming movie Between Mercy and Me. Craig is the producer, writer, and director of this film, and Andrea plays one of the two lead roles and wrote the music for the movie. I've had a chance to screen the film, and it tackles some difficult and controversial issues at the heart of racism and Christianity. And so I was excited to be able to have them on to talk about the movie, their faith and background, and much more. Now, before we jump into it, I want to remind you that if you haven't done so already, you really should subscribe to Word and Way's award-winning email newsletter, A Public Witness, where we deal with issues at the intersection of faith, culture, and politics. Learn more, start reading, and subscribe today at publicwitness.wordandway.org. And now here's my conversation with Craig Lamar Brown and Andrea Summer on Between Mercy and Me. First of all, welcome to the program, Craig and Andrea.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Brian.
Craig, as the director and writer of the film, I wonder if you can give us the pitch, the synopsis. What is the movie about?
Yeah, so the goal of the movie is to encourage healthy conversations around racial unity. This story in particular is about two musicians who are both fighting to bring unity to their town. The lead, who's played by David Driscoll, is a worship leader at his church. He's trying to find ways to encourage the body while still dealing with things that he's wrestling with on the inside of, like, you know, his people in his community, and watching the his overall neighborhood change in regards to gentrification and other challenges within his own community as well that are negatively impacting the community. So from the perspective of Hugo, we see him, continue to fight for change, but it's discouraged. He's distraught. He doesn't know how to move forward. Then he meets Mercy, and the two of them collaborate and continue to, share ideas off of one another. And that was the goal of the story, is to show the beauty that we can all experience through music. It's the kind of the thing that, bridges the gap between all of humanity. And I thought that was the best way to tell a story about racial reconciliation.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously it's a fictitious story, but I wonder, where did the story idea come from? Like, why did you decide this is the story you wanted to tell?
Yeah. So in the height of, COVID, 2020, racial riots, the death of George Floyd, I saw that there was a big disconnect within the church around race. There was no, just from what I could see on social media, there was no healthy way that, the church embraced a conversation. The church, I feel like in that time, kind of looked a lot like the rest of the world, where it was a time where I think we as, believers could have taken a big step in leading the charge and, having this conversation. I think we fell to, the ways of the world during that time. Like any normal father of five, I decided to write a movie about it with 21 original songs. this was just obviously it's not the solution, right? But I think it is a healthy introduction to what can be a very difficult conversation. And I wanted to create something that churches all across the country and people in general could connect with. So yeah, that was the goal and the reason why I decided to write between Mercy and Me.
Andrea, you are Mercy in that, I guess, in the title. Yeah, and you not only star in it, but you also wrote a lot of the music that's in the movie.
I did.
What was that like?
It was such a cool challenge. So I've been writing songs since I was little, very little, and not doing it well. Your first ones are never winners. They're never winners. So probably about like pets or school drama, something like that. But I've been writing songs, been doing the singer-songwriter thing for a long time. And over time, I have, you know, you learn to take different approaches to songwriting when songwriting might usually just be your expressing something of your own experience. But this was such a cool challenge because I was having to put myself in other people's shoes and write to speak to a character, write to develop a character over that, you know, over a few minutes to tell part of the story. And then even stylistically to take two different musical styles, just like the characters are two different people. And just as their relationship starts to come together, their musical styles start to fuse as well. So it was a really interesting challenge, not only as a songwriter, but like as a producer, to really dive into what would this person listen to? What would their influences be? What kind of style of music would they like? What would their voice sound like? And then try and mirror the story through music. So very fun mid-pandemic / post-pandemic outlet and project. And Craig was so gracious to just let me be such a big part of it. He just put a lot of trust in me. So that was honoring.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the different musical styles, and that's one of the things. I mean, obviously the music is the heart of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the songs are a lot of fun. And both you and your co-star, David Driscoll, do fantastic with your individual songs. But then there are those times when the music is trying to bring those two different musical traditions together. And I kind of enjoy that because it's almost a little bit of a musical clash at times and then eventually trying to bring them to, you know, more of a synergy between these different styles as opposed to just the more kind of solo pieces. And so that's a fun part of the movie.
Yeah, it's a mix in the movie. It's a mix of live performances, you know, captured on set in the moment, the more acoustic ones, and studio recordings. So that was also it's really great to kind of show the full range. That way you get those intimate moments that only a live performance can truly create. But then you also get to see the growth of their music and, you know, full band moments, choir moments, and just get the music bigger and bigger as the movie goes on.
And then you mentioned you've been writing songs for a long time, but it is different writing for a movie than just, you know, writing a standalone, mm-hmm. you know, song. I mean, you said your first few songs, you know, weren't good. And I wonder how much of adjustment did it take as you were shifting from, you know, planning a, you know, worship set or a concert to now I'm writing something for a movie.
Mm-hmm. It was real, you know, having Craig have such a clear picture of the characters and the story he wanted to tell, it was like giving me ingredients to cook a meal, you know, so I could ask him whatever questions I wanted and any information he would give me would go into writing the song, you know. So I'd ask him, what about this person do you want to express in this? What development within the character do you want to see from the beginning of the song to the end of the song? What role does this song have in the story? What moment do you want to create? So any one of those things or all of those things would go into kind of crafting the song. And then of course I would, you know, take a crack at it or someone on our team would take a crack at it or we'd collaborate and then send it to him and see how, you know, is this on the right track? Where are we in the right direction? And then would come more the producing side, the production side, where we'd really, like I said, try to bring all the different characters' kind of styles into it. So and empathy is a great motivator for songwriting, I think, because just like in the movie, it's really important for someone watching it or someone creating it to be able to put themselves in somebody else's shoes. And so songwriting was just one of the ways, I think, that I got to experience the trying to view things from somebody else's perspective.
So I joked with you before we started recording that after watching the film, and then you popped on the screen and I was like, oh, I know her, but you know, obviously I don't. And also anything that I might think I know about you is actually Mercy's backstory and not yours. So I wanted to ask a little bit about your own backstory. I mean, you've already hinted a little bit at the fact that, you know, you were writing music even as a kid, but you know, what was that path that led you to the career of being a singer-songwriter?
Oh, that's a great question. My family is really musical in some capacity or another. And I was the youngest, so I had some older cousins. I had an older sister. And so when I came onto the scene, they had already been singing together or creating music together for some time. And, you know, there's nothing more challenging than trying to find a harmony part when, you know, 8 or 9 people are already doing it. So I had to get real creative of like, where do I fit in here? What part is not being sung? So that introduced me to harmony really early. And I think freestyling really early, you know, improv really early, because our family holidays were really just, you know, someone was always playing piano. Someone was always, I mean, we were the nerds who a commercial would come on. And by the end of the commercial, 4 people would be harmonizing with it, the jingle. And then badly, just because that was our sense of humor, like straight up nerds. We were nerds. So musical family for sure. But songwriting was a little bit unique to me. And I, you know, like they all have experience leading music or arranging music or teaching music in some capacity or another. But I remember when I was 4, you know, something tragic happened in my life. My pet died. So, you know, tragedy strikes at a young age. And the first thing I did was just go to the keyboard in our house and sit down and look longingly out the window, like emotional children do, and started singing about it. I didn't know what I was doing, but it was instinctively how I processed and expressed my emotions and experiences. And that went on for some time. I mean, I remember it was really just my own thing. I would sing and perform in choirs and things like that, but songwriting and singing my own songs was like the thing I did alone in the basement, you know? And it wasn't until maybe my senior year of high school that I wrote a song that felt less about me needing to sing it and more about other people needing to hear it. And when that happened, I thought, dang it. And that pushed me to start playing my songs for other people. But I've always had the vision and the dream of writing and singing and recording. It's just, I didn't realize it until I got to college how rare it is to know from an early age what you want to do. It's like, wait, you guys didn't know since you were 4 years old the thing that you wanted? Like, wait, I've just always wanted to be a singer, and writing was always my outlet. So that led me to all sorts of different places, just recording my own songs, playing shows, you know, just that kind of typical singer-songwriter thing. But that also led me to other opportunities, leading worship, collaborating for musicals and stage performances, and writing songs for movies.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably the 4-year-old version didn't see yourself writing songs for a movie, but
no. She's happy about it. I'm glad I evolved past the death of my guinea pig. Yeah. You know, like, I'm glad I evolved past that.
Well, and there wasn't a moment for you to sing about a dead pet in the movie either. So that
but I am
you.
Ready for that role if it happens.
So, Craig, you aren't just writing and directing and producing this film. You also showed up in it. You play one of the smaller figures, but it's a kind of an important role with Trevor. So I wonder, what was that like, kind of putting yourself in the film, and why did you choose that character?
Yeah, so funny, when I casted myself in the role, we had a very small budget, so I was just trying to cut as many ropes as possible. I'll fill this role. I'll be a bad guy for once. And then when it came to shoot, I'm like, oh yes, I need to memorize lines. I need to get a character. But also, I'm glad that I did play that character because I definitely wanted to throw someone in the mix who's very, how can I put it? Very proud to be Black, and definitely wanted, you know, see his people progress. Obviously Trevor in the story has a lot of opinions. It was interesting. I mean, I've never there's definitely I would say in the midst of like when everything was going on in 2020 with the race riots and COVID and everything that was going on, and it's not my normal disposition, but for a moment, I did feel like Trevor. I was angry. And I definitely felt like my people, Black people, African Americans were just being missed in that time. And I felt angry. And unfortunately, like, I fell. There was times on social media, you could find me expressing my anger very loudly. However, righteous my anger was at that time, it wasn't helpful in regards to really just bringing forth unity in that conversation. Me, like the rest of the church, fell victim to the ways of the world. It was a chance where I could have really, you know, entered in to bring harmony. I think. In my own struggle as a Black man, I wanted to be heard. So I think character-wise, Trevor, I think definitely represents the, I want to be heard. Let's get rid of all other emotions and feelings. Hear me now. And it's not that that's necessarily wrong. I'm just not sure how productive it is to a conversation that needs to be had largely within the body, when it's only coming forth as anger and truth. Like, I understand it, I get it, I've been there, but if I'm, you know, consistently only expressing anger and what I feel is right, people put on earmuffs, people don't want to hear it, and people eventually have deaf ears. So that's kind of the character I had in mind when creating Trevor. He's definitely on the anger side. And we'll see if he changes on June 20th.
Theaters. Nice to work that plug in there, of course. So, you know, you mentioned that you maybe have had a little bit of that side, but, you know, obviously you're not Trevor. It's not an autobiographical character that you created. So I wonder if you can tell us a little bit of your backstory. I mean, this is your first film that you're directing. And so congrats, first of all, on that.
Thank you.
What led you to this point? I mean, Andrea already said that she knew since she was like four that she wanted to be a singer-songwriter. Were you like knowing that long ago that you wanted to be a director?
Yeah, I think eventually I knew that I wanted to, when I was a kid, I knew that I wanted to do some form of performing arts, and mainly acting. Like, I'm not a music. Like, I love music. I've the first instrument I ever picked up was a violin. Then I just stopped. And then I play guitar here and there, but I'm not naturally gifted. I'm tone deaf. I can't hear. But I know what music makes me feel. So I've always had like a strong passion for it. So when I was a kid, however, like I was always enthralled with movies and acting in general. So I just didn't know how to go about it. My high school didn't have a performing arts program or anything like that. But when I would watch movies, they always made me feel a certain way. I can feel it and understand like what was happening in the story. So it's always been something that I've thoroughly enjoyed. But it wasn't until I was 29. I was writing. That's not right. I'm getting so old. let's just say early 30s. I'm a software developer. I'm working in corporate America. Opportunity presented itself for me to develop a software application, kind of like a Netflix streaming type app for a producer in LA. And I did that. And over the course of the time with this producer, he had a role open for a new movie he was doing. I'm like, oh, that sounds awesome. Like, if you have any roles, let me know. I love to audition, and I haven't, acted at all at that point. I auditioned. He loved the audition. He gave me the lead role for it. And 3 weeks later, I flew to New York and LA, and I'm starring and producing in my first ever feature. So that was all in a matter of 3 weeks. And yeah, so I literally fell into it. And after acting, I realized that I had a lot more ideas while I was on set on how things should go or what I would do. And I realized like this probably isn't going to last long in acting. So I knew eventually my next step would be writing and directing, and that next step happened. So I think it was very much like a God ordained thing where it was literally one step after the other. And I would say everything came along pretty, not that it was all smooth, but like it was literally just very clear steps into where I am now.
Good. Software developer. I didn't see that on the career path.
We'll be right back with the rest of this conversation. But first, I want to remind you that you should subscribe to Warden Way's award-winning e-newsletter, A Public Witness. It will help you make sense of the world of faith, culture, and politics. Learn more and subscribe today at publicwitness.wardenway.org. And now, back to our conversation.
So, Andrea, you mentioned the idea of telling a story in song and thinking about, where does it start? Where does it end? And obviously, even just, outside of the movie, that's something that's embedded in music. And you've been writing music for years. Yeah, I think music is one of those things that maybe a lot of us think like, I think I could write a song, and then it's actually a whole lot harder than we expect. And so, like, what is it? How do you approach writing a song? And I'm not just talking about for the movie in this case, but thinking about like what's happening in a song that perhaps someone who hasn't been spending the years thinking about it and working and fine tuning the craft, what do we not realize goes into songwriting?
I think that there isn't just one way to go about it. I think everybody is different. Even the most experienced of songwriters have their own way in. Some people, they just have their specialty. Some people are lyric people and it takes more work and it's a little bit more laborious to do the music side, and vice versa. Some people, they hear music and then it takes time to figure out what do I want to say within it. I love the inspiration piece. I love listening to other music or watching something that just sparks an idea. So the idea is almost feels beyond you, you know, that it's something you are just always inviting. You're just always inviting inspiration. You're always looking for inspiration. And if an idea sparks, then it's worth putting the work in to see where it goes. And I mean, some of the most prolific songwriters will write hundreds of songs just to pick 12 to go on a record. That blows my mind. John Foreman is one of those guys, like, that blows my mind. I don't really have the time for that anymore. I gotta make it count. I got kids. I gotta make the songwriting time count. So I think, and being involved in the script writing portion of this movie as well helped, because it really primed me to understand the language that everyone was speaking. You know, what would this character say? What would they sound like, and how would they do it? So instead of writing just from myself and from my own experiences, you know, I really kind of had to move myself out of the way a little bit and immerse myself in other styles and other genres just to get that in my system a bit. So it's almost like, you know, character development. You know, you put yourself in other people's situations, you get around people who are different than you, who can speak to the character, and you allow yourself to be influenced and take little pieces of the pie from all over to try and, again, like kind of cook a meal that fits the story, that fits the moment, that fits the song. I had a friend text me recently and she just said, "How do you write a song?" And I was just like, that is a loaded question. But I do say, like, start with either music or lyric. Pick a lyric. And then it's great to find someone to collaborate with too, who has the other side of it. We had tons of just fantastic collaborations on this soundtrack. Absolutely wonderful. Where we knew, hey, stylistically, this person is going to be a much better fit. Or we want a lot of diversity on the soundtrack. We want to represent the things that you see and the things that you hear and experience. And so painting a picture for them as well and taking any direction that Craig had to offer, you know, hey, we want Hugo is having kind of a identity crisis in regards to himself as a leader, and, you know, really put that up against Moses. You know, let's talk. He's in the wilderness. He's wandering through the desert. He's wondering if he's leading his people well or not. And so you'll hear in a couple of the songs, there's, you know, like Moses metaphors or wilderness metaphors, because that was some of the direction that Craig gave us for describing where Hugo was at as a character.
You mentioned that you've led worship at church, mm-hmm. and I want to talk about that aspect, because that actually is something that I guess you and Mercy, your character, do have in common, mm-hmm. is having led worship music. What's that like? You know, because I mean, obviously that's even a different genre, because mm-hmm. it's not the same as you're on stage performing, you know, and it's a concert. This is, you know, worship is a different type of musical moment. Mm-hmm. So how do you approach leading worship in church? Mm.
One of my favorite things about playing shows, and just as a singer-songwriter, were those smaller, intimate venues, you know, just at a coffee shop where the people watching and listening are, you know, 7 feet away from you and beyond. And so much of playing a show would be telling the stories or talking about what inspired the song or the heart behind it. And that's something I truly carried over into leading worship, where it's just in between songs and sometimes interrupting the song, taking time to connect with the faces in front of you and talk as if you're talking to one person and telling authentic stories and expressing authentic experiences. It's that connection piece. It's that, doesn't matter if there's 5 people in the room or 5,000 people in the room, you're just hanging out with people and you're just having a shared experience. So for me, it wasn't necessarily about the songs we played, though hopefully we would do that well. It was all those little in-between moments of I just want to be a human with someone else, because authenticity and transparency and shared experience is so important to me. And I think the most powerful part, and your superpower in leading worship, is just sharing an experience with someone. Except in leading worship, it's sharing your experience of God and who he is and what that looks like in your life.
So I wanted to throw this question out to both of you. What was the hardest part during the process of making this film? What was a moment where you're like, I'm not sure this is going to work?
I think there's probably a couple of moments I could pull from. I think in writing, you know, so you have this grand idea of like, yeah, I'm going to do this. It's going to be great. And it's awesome. Everyone's going to love it. And the world's going to change, right? That's at a high level. But like when actually digging deep into the script and, you know, trying to write, you know, making sure that the tone is understood and that it wouldn't get missed and that it wouldn't just be another movie about race. That white people get angry at, or black people feel misheard. And so there's a lot of sleepless nights over that. The balancing act of, you know, doing both was, it was just difficult. It was just difficult. So I'm like, I don't know if we make this movie, we release it, if it will actually do what we want it to do. And so that I felt that in and out of like the writing. And then we got into actually making the movie, and there's some very powerful and beautiful moments where I felt like, oh, like this is it, this will work. And then we do another scene and it's like, I don't know. So it's back and forth. But ultimately, really just trusting like my team, and also, I got, like, I mean, this is his story, you know, like I'm being used to tell it. But making a movie is really hard in regards to like we didn't have millions of dollars to do this. Everyone dropped their rates. We needed a lot more money to pull off what we did, but we did it. Thankfully, we did it, but it was hard. So that was, a concern as well. Like, do we actually have the resources to finish this and finish it well? So, and I think a lot of that is just like in, you know, regards to like, it just is what it is when making the movie. But yeah, it's definitely been like a roller coaster moment in the writing process, but also like when we were actually filming the movie as well.
Yeah, I definitely remember moments on set where I could see, Craig wore so many hats. So not only in a moment on set is he trying to tell that story, balance that tone, be the director, consider the vision, consider the mission, but also every minute on set you could see was like a dollar sign in it. Dollar sign. He's like, ooh. So there were so many times where he was like, pretty sure we got it, let's move on. You know, we're like, wait, let's do it again. He's like, oh, you know. So he's just like watching the clock. I mean, I honestly do not know how he managed to spin all those plates at once. And it's just so challenging. But I think that team element certainly helped, because when Craig was leaning too heavy into budget, you know, the other people were like, wait, no, let's get it right. You know, let's take this moment. But then there were scenes in which Craig was just kind of lost within, because he was focusing so much on people's tone of voice and this moment has to do this specific thing. Let's make sure we get that. So it was cool to watch. Just, I don't know. I think it takes so much courage and vulnerability to just dive headfirst into things that you're totally new at. You know, like to be driven completely by the hope of it and the mission of it, to set aside over and over and over again that feeling of like, but can I do it? And is it going to be good? Or, you know, what are people going to think? You know, all those things. And I can relate to that from the acting standpoint, because that's what is pretty new to me. Like, I've done on-camera work and I've done stage performance work, but being a character and developing a character and, you know, making peace with my face on up so close, you know, that's where I kind of had to trust the team. Like, well, I think they think I can do this, and I know I can deliver a good soundtrack. So I'm just going to take the leap and take the risk, because this is something that I want to be a part of. This is something that I want to explore. This is something that I want to do. And just trust that in the moment, you know, Craig was going to ask for what he needed. And so I just hoped I could deliver in the moment.
So I'm going to flip it and ask the opposite question. What was that moment where something happened and you're like, oh, wow, that was so much better than I expected?
Actually, I'll let you go.
So there's a scene. I don't want to do any spoilers.
Yeah, sorry. Spoiler alert.
There's a scene where things get really tense for Hugo and Mercy. And they're both angry. And for me personally, I was a little bit terrified of doing that scene, because when I had worked with acting coaches and had, you know, been doing character work, I always noticed that when it came time to address conflict, I was always the first person to fold. So I had to work on my own ability to stay present within a really heated conflict, just because of my own baggage, my own personal reasons. So I was afraid that in an argument scene that something would be triggered for me and that I wouldn't be able to stay present, that I would fold, that I wouldn't be able to show up as the character, that I wouldn't be able to bring the passion. I was nervous about that. So I worked really hard on that. And I was so proud and so felt so empowered in the moment when we did that scene. I was like, I'm doing it. I'm staying here. Like, I can be this character. And so much of that, of course, was from just the safety that was created and on set and with David, who plays Hugo. You know, we had had enough scenes leading up to that I knew, like, I'm safe with this person and it's the story that comes first. So learning to just put my own, like, how am I doing? How's this going aside and just dive headfirst into, are we telling the story? Are we honoring this moment?
Yeah, and you did seem angry in that scene, so.
I was so angry. Brian. I was so mad. And he was so mad, and I did not back down. I'll just say that.
I'm spoilers. For me, gosh, the entire film. it just turned out so well. I mean, I definitely had like high expectations because I needed to deliver those to my investors and to the team. But yeah, like I feel like it was a big swing, you know, like writing a film that is just layered with so much music and story and making sure that it connects and that we hit all the emotional elements is, I mean, like, yeah, we're swinging for the fences, right? But when I watch it all the way through, I'm like, man, like we did it, like we made it happen. And so that definitely, I mean, the entire project, part of me feel like it shouldn't have been able to be pulled off, especially by a first time director. And again, like I had a I have a really strong team with me, follow me, and definitely in ways where I don't even know how we're going to get there, but hey, let's do it. So yeah, I can literally say that for the whole project. And to get everything that I wanted, but like most of everything that we aim to get and that we wanted to be excellent, like I think we did it. So I've been just super proud of the team for that. And as we're giving the film to, only been a few people have actually seen the film, whether it's potential investors or potential people to partner with us, such as yourself, podcast. So it's like when I hear feedback of like the positive reviews, I'm like, oh, like, yes, like this is confirmation that the thing we did is great. So yeah, that's again, like it, literally the entire project for me.
I mean, you're at that nervous stage for, at least for me, it's not like the creating something. It's that time after you're done and then you're waiting to hear back from other people. Right. So like, you're just like, there's nothing you can do now and yeah. You're still waiting for a few more weeks to see like, do people even like this?
Yeah, exactly. So
I would call this project Craig's sixth child. Because it is very much, yep. This is his other baby.
Yep. It is.
Well, may there be many more. So,
yeah. Movies. Well, movies, not children. Movies.
Yeah. Well, I was, yes.
Any more children.
That's a topic for another podcast.
Yeah, so
that's right. We'll
All right, so as we close up, I mean, you already gave a little bit of a hint here, but how can people find the film?
Yes, you can go to the website, betweenmercyandme.com, where you can click a couple of links, and it'll take you to the Fathom Events page, where you can actually buy your ticket. And you can, it's awesome, you can search the location, see exactly what theater the movie is playing near you. So that's very accessible. And all the social media, our social media handle is Between Mercy and Me. So Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. We out here. I feel so like I don't have a TikTok, so that the movie has one. I'm like, man, like I somewhat feel young, you know.
The movie's cooler than you are.
Exactly.
Craig and Andrea, thanks so much for joining us on the program, and I hope people will check out the film June 20th in theaters, Between Mercy and Me.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Dangerous Dogma. You can find more information and links in the show notes at dogma.wordandway.org. And don't forget to check out our website, wordandway.org, to learn more about our other offerings, including A Public Witness, a subscriber e-newsletter to help you make sense of faith, culture, and politics. If you've enjoyed this episode, I hope that you will share it with your friends on Facebook, and head over to iTunes or your favorite podcast platform and write a positive review. It really will help more people to find the show. If you'd like to give to support this program, we greatly appreciate it. And all you have to do at wordandway.org is hit the donate button. And whatever you give there will help support the production of this podcast, as well as our website, monthly magazine, and other offerings. If you have any comments or feedback about this program, you can send those to me at bkaylor@wordandway.org. Thanks for listening.